Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we get to talk to writers and get to know a little bit more about their work through a series of five questions. And it's been really fun getting to invite a lot of different kinds of guests on. And today, my guest is author Linda Norlander. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How are you today?
I am fine. So happy to be here.
Good. I'm glad to have you. So I'm just going to do a brief little bio introduction. Linda is the author of the Cabin by the Lake mystery series, which is set in the woods of northern Minnesota. And now there's two books in the series. The first one was Death of an Editor, which I took no offense to, by the way. And the second one is Death of a Starling, which just is coming out very soon, like next week. The series features Jamie Forrest. And she's quite a character, for sure. She's my favorite. Linda has written award-winning short fiction, nonfiction, and humor in addition to her mystery series. And before taking up the pen to write murder mysteries, she worked as a nurse in public health and end-of-life care. She lives with her husband in Tacoma, Washington. So she's out there on the West Coast. I have a lot of guests that come out on the West Coast. And for me, it's like almost end of day, and it's about lunchtime for you. So that's always kind of funny. I'm so glad that you're here. So glad you're here. So how did your writing career get started? Let's just launch right into the questions. The first question is, how did your writing career get started?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story. My father was a small town newspaper editor. And in those days, the small town newspaper editor not only wrote the stories, but he had his own column. And it was traditional that the wife of the small town newspaper editor also wrote a column. So my mother was a writer. She wrote something called Over a Cup of Coffee. And it was supposed to be sort of a gossipy recipe, gardening kind of thing, except that wasn't my mother. So so she wrote some very interesting things. So we had a real love for writing in the family. I remember actually my first step into writing, I think I was about 10 years old, and I had just read this book, this children's book that was supposedly narrated by a doll, and I was fascinated with it. So I decided I was going to write an autobiography of a puppy. And I can tell you to this day, I remember the first line of it, which was, I take pen in paw with a little difficulty to write my memoirs.
That's so cute.
Now, unfortunately, or probably fortunately, the rest of that autobiography is lost to history, but, but I consider that my launch. And I have always written. I'm a big reader, and I found that most authors are readers as well as writers. But I always wanted to be an author. But my career took a little bit different path. You know, on your way to life, something else happens. And I happened into nursing, and particularly into end-of-life care, which I loved, hospice and end-of-life care, and discovered that I could also write about that. So my first published books were, one of them was a book for baby boomers on how to talk with your parents about end-of-life planning. And part of the reason I loved writing that is because I could add stories from my own experience and from my professional experience. So that's sort of how I got my start. And I'll have to confess to you, I do have a closet full of unpublished manuscripts that need to stay there.
Well, that's knowledge. Knowledge is power. If you know that they need to stay there, then that's the sign of a good writer.
Or maybe I consider it inventory.
Right. Or if you're like super late on a deadline one time, you're like, okay, here, let's just send this in and see if this applies. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll grab that one.
Right. Like, this looks good. I'll just send it. Change the names to Jamie Forrest and see if Sean notices.
Let's see what happens. Yeah.
I would probably notice, maybe, depending on the day. Well, that's all very cool. I think a lot of writers end up are readers first, and we always try our hand at, you know, that first story that, you know, but you have to, it's a training wheel story, like, you know, the one with the puppy. So I think my first short story I wrote, I was really little, like maybe 6 or 7. And I wrote a story about a dinosaur egg that was found at a party because the sun had heated it up enough. But I, you know, of course, like the sun had come out before that day, but that's not what a 6-year-old thinks. And my mom is the oldest of 7, and I put every single family member into my story. And my story was like 3 pages. that was way too many characters for this story. But, you know, I was going with it, but it's, you know, never stopped having the bug of writing after that. But it's very cute to remember those kinds of things. So speaking of when we're young, if you could tell your younger self, your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
I think that first of all, and I think we all, those of us that love to write, look at, say the best-selling authors that make the best-selling list, the Stephen Kings, and they make a lot of money. And my first piece of advice is don't plan on that. My second piece of advice would be to find yourself a group. A writer's group. I have found that's been wonderful to have what I'm writing bounced off other people. That doesn't mean it's always easy to do that, especially because I don't know about you, Sean, but as soon as I finish my first draft, in my mind, it's perfect. and then you go back and say, oh, what was I thinking?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like it's pretty close to perfect. And I think it's just the elation of getting all those words out. And then you're like, it's, you know, it's like runner's high.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I am awesome. Then you go back if you wait a month, you go back, you're like, oh, yeah, I need to fix a lot of these things in here. But it's a nice feeling. It's writer's high. We'll call it that.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I've learned, and this would be another piece of advice, is that once you finished it, it's really important to let it simmer, let it sit for a while, and then go back to it. And that's when you're going to say, oh, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Another piece that I would say to my younger self is write what you love. Don't write what you think other people are going to want to read. Mm. Now, sometimes you kind of compromise. The first novel that I wrote that is one of those that's now sitting in the closet gathering a lot of dust, I submitted to an agent, and surprise, surprise, he got back to me. And when he got back to me, he said, this book is too harsh, too dark, and too spare to ever be publishable. And looking back on it, he was absolutely right. And I realized that I do like dark books, but I also love books that have humor, books that have some lightness to it. So I've learned to sort of compromise, you know, again, writing what I love. And then the other piece of advice I would say is that if you're writing in a genre, know the word count. I had an experience where I submitted something to an agent, and she again got back to me, which isn't for a lot of writers. That's almost a coup right there. And she said, this is a mystery. You realize that word counts in mysteries are around 80,000 words, and you've only got 30,000 words.
That's too little.
Yes. Yes. You must add a few words here and there.
Double it and then add some more.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, that's like a novella. You know, that is something. That's a very long short story, you know.
Yes.
More like a novella. Yeah. Well, that's
It surprised me how I did not know that I didn't even know enough to look and see what the word count was.
Yeah. Well, it's good. It's so weird that Shay got back to you to tell you that, you know, like that's interesting.
Yeah.
So she saw some glimmer of greatness there, because a lot of times, you know, they just sort of their shoulder move out to the next person, you know. That's cool. Those are all very good advice points. You should do a class.
Oh, well, I do have a little story about a class that I did do.
Yeah.
A friend of mine is a high school, well, she's retired now, but she was a high school English teacher. And I had published a series in the 1980s of short humor. And she was using it for her speech classes. And she asked me to come and talk about writing. So I'm not a teacher. I didn't know how to approach 16-year-olds, but I got in front of the class and I wrote on the class board, on the chalkboard, what writers are. And I said, writers write, writers read, and writers steal. And what I meant by writers steal was not they plagiarize, but you take bits and pieces from your experience and from other people's experience, and you glue it all together in creating your characters. Mm-hmm. Well, their small town newspaper came and took a picture of me by the chalkboard and published it on their front page.
Nice.
with me telling them steal.
People started, you know, closing their doors when you walked up to the mini mart the next day, like, I'm not letting old Linda in here, she's gonna walk out. Yeah. With some of her stuff. That's hilarious. That is so funny. That's like this, that's like the premise of a sitcom or something.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not sure if I got invited back. I don't remember.
Yeah, maybe not. You probably would remember if you got invited back. That's so funny. I love that. Writers steal. Uh-huh. I know what you mean. Yeah. Because Tina Turner said, I was watching an interview that she did a long time ago. I love Tina Turner. And she said, you know, there's no unique music, really. I mean, it's all sort of, it's already out there. Like, music is out there. So you just kind of take influences from, you know, she was really loved rock and roll, but she, you know, came from R&B. And, you know, she says, it's like a palette, like an artist's palette, and you make it your own. So right. you take from here, you take from there, you take from this, and you make it your own sound. And it's the same thing with any art, you know, it's just, there's, you know, there is not a new story, really, you know, there's right. there's the basic stories that we all know. And then it's how you present it that makes it unique to you, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not sure that that class of 16-year-olds really understood that concept.
Well, it might be a little nuanced for them.
Yeah.
Like, that lady told me I could go out and steal, and I'm going to go do that right now. So you're going to run out of town on a rail.
Yeah.
Okay, so my next question is, has anything you've written ever surprised you? In other words, something you had no idea was going to happen showed up on the page.
I have to say that happens all the time. And, you know, that's part of what I love about writing is when I sit down to work on something, I usually have something in my mind. This is where I want this chapter to go or this story to go. And then all of a sudden, a new character will pop in. And it's like, well, where did you come from? And what am I supposed to do with you? It happened for me in the Cabin by the Lake series, in Death of an Editor, all of a sudden this octogenarian lawyer named Clarence showed up. I had no expectation that he was going to come. And it turns out I love him. He's one of my favorite characters. Where he came from and why he showed up, I don't know, but that was a huge surprise. Another surprise to me was that when I sat down to write Death of an Editor, I was thinking of Jamie in her cabin, and what do people have in their cabins? They have cats. She comes from New York City, so she could have had a cat in her apartment in New York City and brought the cat along, and that was my plan, mm-hmm. except I couldn't stand the cat. So I chucked the cat, and all of a sudden this rescue dog showed up. And that's where Bronte, her dog, came from. It was not my plan. It was like, this dog wants in.
Yeah, isn't it fun?
It is.
But I mean, if and everyone should go out and get these books immediately and read them because they're wonderful. I'm not just saying that as your editor. I'm saying that as a fan. but those two people, Clarence and Bronte, are the when I think about your books, I think of them. You know, they come through so clearly, and I don't struggle to visualize them at all. And it's, you know, especially in the second book, Clarence has a bigger role in that book, and he's feisty. He comes out and helps her, and you know, it's just I like how he's evolving too. Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah, he wasn't part of the plan, but he certainly is now.
But that's part of the magic of the writing, because it's, you know, this unplanned, you know, these two things you hadn't planned come through so vividly, and it's like your brain is saying, this needs to happen. Your subconscious somehow is putting them there, I guess, because it happened to me too. And it's bizarre. And I've mentioned it on the show before, but I had a character in my books. He's a stepbrother. He's a half brother of one of my characters. And I put him in the first book because I just didn't, you know, my characters live together, they're roommates, and I wanted her to be able to talk about her past, but it's kind of like people don't normally walk around their house and talk about it. I remember when I was four, I did this. So I wanted to have her have like a person to have conversations with, so it would be enlightening about how they grew up. And then he was just supposed to come in and do that for that role and then leave. And he ended up being one of the most favorite characters of the series. Everyone was asking about him. Is Max coming back? Is Max going to be in the next book? Like, he was like the first, because he's sort of like handsome and goofy and a rogue. Like, he was just sort of like a person I introduced just for a foil to give her someone to talk to. And he turned out to have one book is almost about all about him. So yeah, it happens. But I love when that happens. It's so fun. It's very magical. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, all right. The fifth question I always reserve for something a little off the wall, maybe not so closely related to writing, but you know, here we go. If you could invite one famous writer to dinner, who would it be and why?
That one came to me almost immediately. And I have to admit, I went through and thought, well, I should come up with somebody who's great and literary and, oh, I don't know, maybe one of the Brontes. But the truth is, the person that I would want to come to dinner is John D. MacDonald. And I'm not sure, I don't know if, it depends on whether your audience is older or younger, but John D. MacDonald had a whole series of sort of mystery action books that he wrote in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. And his main character was Travis McGee. And I'll tell you, as a teenager, I read those books over and over and over again. I loved him as an action hero, but I also loved that John D. MacDonald could create such a community. And I found out later, reading some interviews with him and about him, that he was really an economist. So he has a secondary character named Meyer, who's an economist and writes with a great deal of authority about it. He was once asked, and I've thought about this for years. You know, when you're writing books, there's information that you need to have. There's some research you need to have. And they asked him, you know, how do you get your information? And he said, I have a giant Rolodex. And then he just called people.
Yeah. That was his Google.
Yeah, that was his Google. I really appreciate Google, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
It's made our lives much, much easier in looking things up. But in those days, you know, he had to call people up.
Yeah, yeah. So I used to be a caterer. So I'm wondering, like, what would you serve at that dinner? You have to have, like, you know, highballs and like steak or something, like, you know.
Yep, that would be it.
Yeah, see? Or a catering or imaginary dinner party. Oh, well, that's a cool answer. I like that. I like that. I have some of his old paperbacks because one of my hobbies was to go to the dime stores and flea market kind of places and just grab up boxes of books. And I have all these, you know, old paperbacks that people just, you know, tossed out or whatever, buy a box for a dollar. So I have a bunch of his books here and I've, you know, dip into them once in a while. You know, it's kind of fun. I like to read, I always try to keep up with like what currently is being published, but then I like to read old classic novels too at the same time, just kind of, you know, I'm trying to give myself an MFA or whatever in crime writing genre. So I do, that's my strategy, is to read. That's how I tell myself about movies. I just watched every movie that was nominated for Academy Award, going back to the 60s, so I could learn about movies. So, I didn't go to film school, even though I would have liked that. But anyway, very good choice. I like that a lot. So, all right. So then we do a final quiz. It's a rapid fire quiz.
Oh, I didn't know about this.
Okay, well, good. all the answers are correct or not correct. Just, you know, it depends on what you think in the moment. That's all right. You'd be surprised. We get some really crazy answers out of this. It's kind of fun. Okay, first thing that comes to mind. Number one, beach or mountains?
Beach.
Okay, beach is good. I like the beach. Cake or pie?
Pie.
Okay, are you a morning person or night owl?
Neither. I'm sort of in between. My best time is between 10 and 2.
Midday.
Yeah, midday.
Is that tea time? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Well, that is my afternoon anyway. I can't do math in my head on the spot. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Okay, well, you have a dog in your book, so that makes sense. And you hated the cat.
I don't hate cats, by the way, but that particular cat I really did not like and had to get rid of.
It's so funny you didn't like a fictional cat. That's like, it's like the one that you made up. Yeah. I don't like the one that I made up in my head. And then coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Okay. We're going to have to delve into this cat. I think this, we'll have to talk to us like a shrink about the cat thing.
Yeah.
You created a likable cat of your own creation. So what's coming up next for you? What's going on?
I am, Death of a Starling is out next week, and I am busy working on revisions for the third Cabin by the Lake mystery, which will take place in the winter. Each of the books takes place in a different season, because I wanted to feature the different seasons in northern Minnesota. So the third book, which will come out a year from now, is called Death of the Snow Ghost.
Ooh, cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm already thinking of the cover, what it's going to be. It's going to be beautiful.
I've got it in my head.
Oh, good. Yay, that'll be easy. Yeah. Well, very cool. Very cool. Well, good luck with everything. And it's been great to see you. I can see you. Everyone else can hear you, but I can see your lovely face, and it's nice to see you. And I hope I get to see everybody in person at least once sometime soon, you know, going forward someday. You never know.
It will happen.
It will happen. We'll get there. We're almost there. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I do have a website that people can go visit and find information about you.
Yes. It's lyndanorlander.com.
Oh, just like it sounds. Cool.
Just like it sounds. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
Of course, anytime.